a sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rem, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on June 8, 1986, entitled, Social Security? The scripture readings are Ecclesiastes 11, verses 1 through 6, and Mark 3, verses 31 through 35. The text for the sermon is Ecclesiastes 11, verse 4. Copyright, Grand Valley State University.
Well, I had a bit of good news for the graduates of 1986, and that is that the actuaries of the Social Security system have projected the future and say that the system's good for the next 80 years. So the class of 86 really can breathe a sigh of relief and get on with their careers knowing that they're socially secure. Actually, the surveys show that people between the ages of, 45 and 60 are somewhat concerned about the system, and people between 25 and 40 are quite anxious about the system, and even some young people are worried about it. But now the facts are in, the economy strong and on the broad back of an industrial society. For the next 80 years at least, we're okay, and that's as far as they've projected. So no fear, graduate with calm peace of mind. Now, of course, to talk about Social Security to graduates on Baccalaureate Sunday may seem highly inappropriate, but I assure you that I really did not talk about the system of Social Security, that is, the government insurance program. The facts I just gave you are true facts, but that isn't the point of the message. The point of the message is that a society can get so permeated by the lust for security that it loses its way and loses its life. Now, I want to say that I believe that a society does have a responsibility to provide for its own. I think that it is necessary to provide a certain security net for all persons in a society, whether they deserve it or not. And I know that we do a lot of grumbling about the welfare state, and all of us could do it better, but nonetheless, the social concern, the fact that a society needs to be characterized by compassion, is absolutely necessary. I want to say that. It's got nothing to do with the message, but I don't want you to think that I'm denigrating the social concern, the concern for dignity for all people. I certainly am not. But I do know that it is very possible for an obsessive, overweening concern for Social Security, not the insurance program, but the reality of social security, to short-circuit life. Life is not a gift given in order that we might seek security. Life is a gift given in order that we might lose our life in some great enterprise, some great cause, some great service, some noble end, pursuing some beautiful dream, stirred and fired by some great vision. That is to live fully and to live richly. And so I wanted to say to the graduates, but every time I try to aim a message particularly at graduates, I realize that the greatest impact of the message is right for me, for myself. And as a matter of fact, it ain't too bad either for senior citizens. And so I have a message for all of us this morning. It's not as though the day was over when the graduates left. This word is for you and for me. I'm preaching to myself this morning, and I'm saying to myself, stop playing it safe and get off that conservative kick and continue to invest your life. Continue to dream the dream and pursue the vision, for that is that which God calls us to do, not to play it safe, but to invest our all. I have an interesting text this morning in a rather obscure Old Testament book. The writer of the book of Ecclesiastes probably had a hard time getting into the canon because he just was not one of those fellows willing to mask all of his doubts and all of his questions under a kind of mask of pious cliché. he raised some pretty tough questions. He struggled with some pretty tough questions. He had some doubts. He was agnostic on some very important issues. And here and there, he's even tinged with a bit of cynicism. I'm rather glad that this minority witness got into the canon, because there are those days when I can identify him with him, and so can you. Those days when we've done our best and tried our hardest and kind of wish like we could just throw in the towel, throw up our hands and say, what's the use? Does it make any difference? Well, the writer to the Ecclesiastes has a lot to say along that vein. He is one of the wisdom writers in the Old Testament. The wisdom books are very interesting. They have a bit of a different twist than the kind of biblical passages that we have been nurtured on. And yet they have a great message to say to us. And sometimes, even in this book of Ecclesiastes, amid all the struggling and the wrestling and the disappointment and the kind of, well, his conclusion is vanity of vanities, all is vanity, emptiness, that's the bottom line of life. But in the midst of all of that, he does have some very practical wisdom. And I think the text of the morning is a marvelous statement to remind us that life is a risky business and we ought to stop playing it safe. Rather, God calls us to adventure. Listen to the text. He who watches the wind will never sow, and he who keeps an eye on the clouds will never reap. Now, I was raised in order to check the wind and watch the clouds. And the writer here says that while you're watching the wind and the clouds, you may miss the main event of life. Now, we are not an agricultural society here, so maybe this doesn't immediately call images to our mind, but I think we can understand, because all of us try to put the fertilizer on the grass at the right time, and all of us wonder when it is the best time to plant the petunias. Broadcasting the seed in the Old Testament, or in the Agricultural Society of Israel, that's where that term broadcast comes from. The sower went out to sow, and he dipped his hand in the seed bag, and he let it fly. And of course, if he didn't check the wind, he might let it fly, and it might be caught up in the wind and carried away and never get on the field. And we all know, too, that it's important at harvest time that the rains come at the right time and not the wrong time, because the harvest cut and then lying there with the rain could have a ruinous effect. But the point that the writer wants to make is that while one ought to use one's head when one is broadcasting the seed or when one is harvesting the grain, to use one's head too long, to waver and to hesitate and to procrastinate and to keep looking for just a little bit better situation may bring us beyond the line at which it's possible to get involved at all. While we are checking the wind and the clouds, we might lose life. And therefore, we cannot be too secure. We cannot absolutely guarantee that all will be well. We have to live with a certain degree of risk. We are called to daring faith, to the adventure of faith. We are called to invest our lives and to lose our lives. And as long as we are holding tightly to our lives, cautious and careful and tightly wound, we will miss the best of life. It is not possible to live fully alive, fully human, and to live with all this constant care. Certainly that's no reflection on some positive regard for the future, but Jesus did say, live a day at a time, and he did say it in the context in which he was calling us away from an overweening anxiety about life. Most of the big issues in life we can't handle anyway. And so we have to recognize, as the Old Testament writer recognized, that there is a contingency in life. And by that I mean, life is not all set out and neatly ordered. And the end is not known from the beginning. It's not all poured in concrete and all we have to do is walk through it. And it doesn't make any difference about our choices or our designs or our desires or our enthusiasm or our energy. Life is not that way. Human experience is not that way. Life is open. The future is unpredictable. God is certain. But our lives and our pathway has the possibility of going in many directions. He has created us free and responsible people, and He has charged us with responsible stewardship of His creation. And consequently, we are called to engagement with life, recognizing that there is an element of risk and that we are called to live with daring faith. Now, there's something in us all that resists that kind of daring. There is something in us all that really lusts for security. We really want to know that all can be bracketed in a safe package. We want life in a neat package with no loose ends. We'd like to be able to get it in a nice little box with no ends overflowing the box. We would like to have it all there where we can get a handle on it, where we can manage it, where we can control it, where there'll be no surprises. And that's just not the way it is. The Old Testament writer knew that. But he also knew that if that spooked you, if that became the obsessive concern of one's life, one would miss life completely. And so he said, don't spend too much time checking the wind. Don't spend too much time checking the clouds. Get on with life. Plunge in. Take the plunge. Take the risk. Live with daring. And trust God all the time in the meantime. Now, as I said, there's something within us that would rather live carefully. And depending on the individual person and the way in which we've been nurtured, we will respond with either relative or great anxiety at the thought of plunging into life. But I believe that there's nothing more tragic than to be dead while you're still alive. And it is highly possible for the body to keep on living for a little while when the human spirit has already died. But it is no wonder that we die, folks. Because when the human spirit dies, the body can only keep going so long. And when there's no longer any animating purpose, when there's no longer any compelling hope, when there's no longer any dream, when there's no longer any vision, I don't care if you're graduating from high school or if you're on the threshold of being an octogenarian, that doesn't make any difference. To be human is to live by hope, to live by dream, to live by vision, to live by active engagement with life. And there's always some risk involved. And the person that plays it safe will die before his life is over. And so I call you today to admit and recognize the contingency of life and to live with daring and with risk. There's nothing more tragic than having life over before it's through. In the book Habits of the Heart, which is an analysis of contemporary American society, Robert Bella and the others have looked at people in all stages of life, and one observer went to a retirement community where he found that, and this is a national statistic, that 57.1% of the people who have retired recently have retired before the age of 65, and over 60% of the retirements recently have been voluntary retirements. And when he went to the retirement community and he asked and interviewed people, he found that people were saying to him they were proud, they were happy for their careers, their success as executives or school teachers or whatever they might have been. But they were tired of the pressure. They wanted to get out of the rat race. They had paid their dues, and they were ready to get on with a little less pressure in life. And he also said that many of them had no sense that their life work had been a socially important and fruitful engagement. More people, he said, saw their life work as a means by which to support their habit, a means by which to support their particular lifestyle. And so, obviously, if one's vocation is not a vocation, if one has no sense of calling, if one has no sense of being involved in something that makes a difference and something of eternal significance, something of human good, then with all of the pressure and all the rest, one will want to get out of it as soon as possible. Now, it's a great thing to get out of it if you can, if you're going to keep on living, if there's something more exciting you can do, some other dream you can pursue. But to get out of it as quick as you can and then to wait for the undertaker, that is to die before your time. Living with risk, because life is contingent. That is the Word of God in the Old Testament. That's the wisdom literature. This is a word for graduates, but it has application to senior citizens as well. Saw a Broadway play recently. Good thing you weren't here in the first service, Nancy, because I said that starring in it was Marlon Brando. Can you believe that? Yeah, you would have been so embarrassed. It was really Marlo Thomas. Close, isn't it? Not close. Well, the play is called Social Security. And it's kind of a light, fluffy, little interesting little story. But it's really about two daughters who have the care of a mother. The first daughter is very cautious, very uptight, very fastidious, who has overprotected her own daughter and who is overprotecting her aged mother. And now suddenly, a disaster hits. The young lady goes off to college. And once she goes off to college, whoosh, you know, getting from under that overweening overprotection, and my goodness, what she got into. So now, fearful mother and father have to go to visit daughter on campus. And so they come to visit the other daughter, who's kind of chic and with it and has a fancy East Side apartment in New York City and owns an art gallery. And they say, "Mother's coming." Well, the door opens, and here comes Mother, 90 years old, on a walker, looking, you know, like a rag bag from yesteryear, and hardly able to move. And, well, you see this chic young couple in their chic East Side apartment, and then you learn that there is a world-famous artist coming to dinner. And here's this 90-year-old in the early stages of being a corpse that they have to do something with. But there was more going on in the old lady than anybody suspected. And so she got dressed for dinner, and the artist happened to be 98 years old. And the mother was 90 years old, and there they sat on the couch together, and they started, you know, bantering back and forth. And, well, to make a long story short, they fell in love. And the play ends. The old lady threw away her walker. And she threw away all of her old gray duds and got her some real glad rags on. And the last we knew, they were taken off for the south of France, and he was going to set her up in an apartment in Manhattan. Why, who said that, you know, life has to end with Social Security? It all depends on whether there's a meaning and a purpose, whether there's light and love and hope and buoyancy in life. And so this is not simply a word for the graduates. It's, well, to tell you the truth, it's a word to me. I realized the other day, as I was reflecting on all the things we're trying to do at Christ Community all at once, and I was starting to get scared and nervous and shaking in my boots. And then I realized that when I came back here 15 years ago, I was wild and woolly and ready to go and not afraid of anything. And the senior citizens as well, those that had moved beyond those middle years, they were ready to go too. Why not? It was the ones who were then the age I am now who were scared to death. The ones who had paid their dues, the ones who were feeling all the responsibility, the ones who had grown through their experience wise and conservative, who were saying, "It's not possible, it can't possibly be done." The only resistance we got was not from the young and not from the old, but ones in the middle. And all at once I thought, that's my problem, I'm in the middle. I can't dream anymore. I've grown to that point of immobility because everything's so scary all at once. And then I said, "God, help me to keep dreaming. Help the vision to stay alive. Don't let me grow old while I'm still young." And I realized the message wasn't really for the graduates. The message was really for myself. The message was to stay alive as long as God gives you life. Don't keep checking the clouds. Don't keep checking the wind. Get on with life. Invest. Engage. Be involved. Give it your all. Dare to risk. Live with daring. Keep hope alive. Keep the vision burning bright. And so, Jesus was that kind of a person. I said to the graduates, there are certain conspiracies about to undercut the possibility of you ever amounting to anything. And the people involved in that conspiracy are your parents and your teachers and your pastors, home, school, and church. What is it but a terrible trinity of domesticating power, saying to the youth, be careful, don't wager, don't get out on a limb, go easy. Oh, parents are awful. Parents are incurable. I lost a few parents after the first service, but I have to admit it. I am a parent. Last night I called youngest son Joseph. Now those of you who happen to know Joe will not be surprised when I say that while I was in conversation with Joseph, Nancy called me to dinner twice and I didn't respond, and when I finally got down there she said, why didn't you say something? I said, I was on the phone. She said, you weren't saying anything. I said, I know, I was talking to Joe. I said, how are you, Joe? And that was all I needed. For 20 minutes, he told me. Now, Joseph is facing this week 6 major exams. He is in his final quarter of a computer science major at Georgia Tech, which is no mean engineering school. He tells me that MIT is the Georgia Tech of the North, as Joseph says. And he has 6 exams coming up this week. I said, well, did you have a good week in preparation? He said, well, actually, he said, I haven't been able to yet because, he said, this county down south of Atlanta wanted to see a demonstration of our new project. You see, he's also president of a company that he incorporated in Florida when he was in high school and now is incorporated in Georgia. Well, he also works for a high-tech firm outside of Atlanta while he goes to school. And he is on the very edge of something that's just breaking through. The equipment is just coming out. It has to do with a laser disc and all of this kind of thing. And he's trying to get a county in Georgia to buy his project because he says, Dad, he said, I've got $8,000 to $12,000 of venture capital. And he said, by that I can get the prototype equipment. But he said, if I can just get the first big contract, he said, then I'll be ready to go for $350,000 to $500,000 so I can market the thing in Georgia. And if I can get several sales in Georgia, I'll be ready to go for $7 to $10 million to market it nationally. Well, God forgive me, I'm a parent. When he was all done with that exciting news, and I've only given you just, you know, the highlights, I said, Joe, are you ready for your exams? Well, I realize, you see, it's the world's passed me by. I'm a parent. And I'm in conspiracy with his teachers and the church, family, school, and church in a conspiracy to keep these kids domesticated, kind of down the middle of the road. I mean, who wants a kid that sticks out? That's why I read that gospel passage. I didn't read verse 21. But verse 21 of Mark 3 says that Jesus was teaching and he was being encountered by the religious authorities and they were challenging what he was saying. The common people were hearing him gladly because the common people saw here a breath of fresh air. Windows were opening. They loved to hear him. But the establishment, those between 45 and 60, my age, they said, wait a minute, wait a minute, we just got this thing together. And so Jesus was beginning to be a threat, and the word spread, and it came to Mary and his brothers and sisters over there in Nazareth. And they packed up to take him back home. Mary said, why did I have to have a boy like that? Jesus, just come home. What if Jesus had just come home? He might have ended up the finest carpenter in Nazareth. That's what Mary wanted. Already at age 12, he had to say to her, I got to be about my father's business. And now what they were about was to take him out of the limelight. They didn't want to be embarrassed by this boy who didn't play it by the rules. And frankly, I don't want to be either. Just like a nice kid. Can't you just do it like ordinary people do it? Oh, parents and the educational system can't handle those kind of people either. They're the kind of people the educational system usually flunks. And the church excommunicates them. Well, life is contingent, and it belongs to those who dare to risk. And we can risk, and we can plunge in, and we can lose our lives because the eternal God is our refuge and underneath our everlasting arms. If I were to add a third lesson this morning, I would have read from the 8th chapter of Romans, in which Paul, after reflecting on the Christian faith, the reality of what has happened in Jesus Christ, says, that being the case, what can separate us from the love of Christ? Persecution, famine, nakedness, peril, sword. Apparently those things can happen. Those things might happen. Those things have happened and will happen again. Nakedness, peril, sword, hunger, suffering, tragedy. It's all a part of it. No guarantee against it. Maybe my lot tomorrow. So what? Can it separate me from the love of Christ? No way. No, Paul says, I am convinced we are more than conquerors through Him who loved us. Therefore, I am persuaded that neither heights nor depths, nor principalities, nor powers, nor angels, nor things in the world as it is or in the world as it will become will be able to separate us from the love of God in Christ Jesus, our Lord. Sometimes I hear people go around as though suddenly in this modern age at the end of the 20th century, God has run out of competence. We get afraid, fearful, feel that everything's falling apart, everything's unraveling. Nonsense. God is God. Plunge in. Dare. Live with vision and dream. Conquer the day. Capture the moment. Because God is able as well in 1986 as He was in 1886. There were doomsday sayers in that century as well as in our own. And all of it is not a real great wisdom, but a lack of trust in the eternal God. My son Joseph at age 22 had all of the wisdom and mellowness that I do at age 51. He wouldn't be worth a plug nickel. And I hope God keeps reminding me of it. And I hope I keep remembering too to stay alive all the days of my life. Not checking the wind too much. Not worrying about the clouds too much. Trusting in the love of God that'll never let me go. Living with gusto.